It's Thursday, November 10th. This is episode 44 of The Shanaki, How to Succeed in Evil, Part 10. For The Shanaki, I'm Patrick McLean.
I'm Vladislav Kliptevich. I am to read statement. I am simple man, electrician. I come to country for better job, more future, better life for family. I come because here there is justice. And now I must plead for justice.
A picture of Edwin Windsor flashed up on the screen.
This man killed my son. Power boy, and no one will come forward. He was good boy, became super because we live under high tension power line. My wife, she joke it from bringing work home with me, but now she doesn't not joke. She cry and cry and cry. So I beg you, for someone who is witness, someone must, for my boy. My power boy.
Having completed a taxing round of negotiations for the purchase of an insurance company in the Midwest, Edwin Windsor was winging his way back home in the Omdemnity Gulfstar IV. Seeking escape in the poetry of Dante, Edwin's back was turned to the wall of video monitors that were the most ostentatious feature of the aircraft. One of the adjusters, the intelligent, impeccably manicured, and professionally violent young man who accompanied Edwin everywhere he went, tapped him on the shoulder.
Sir, you should see this.
Edwin's eyes widened slightly. He sighed and closed the book. Thank you, John. Please get my lawyer and Special Agent Tupwaddle on the phone.
I take it you've seen the news, Mr. Windsor.
Yes, Agent. We need to take care of this as quickly as possible. It could prove to be very costly to Omdemnity. A matter like this, even though slander...
That's just the problem, Mr. Windsor. It's not slander.
A patient man, Tupwaddle was content to let the insinuation do its work. What can you prove?
We have a witness who's willing to testify that you gave the order to kill Barry Kliptevich, a.k.a. Power Boy. I've got a bench warrant for your arrest and a list of racketeering and criminal conspiracy charges as long as my arm.
Your arm, Agent? I would have tried for a more sizable metaphor myself.
Professionally, I urge you to turn yourself in, Mr. Windsor. It's a matter for the courts now.
And personally?
Personally, I hope you're stupid enough to run.
Thank you for your concern, Agent Tupwaddle. Goodbye. Please inform Nigel that we're expecting unwanted guests. Nigel, the pilot, promptly turned off the FAA transponder, which rendered the plane invisible to civilian air traffic controllers. A highly trained and talented pilot, Nigel knew precisely how illegal this was, and that if he was caught, he would never again be allowed to fly in a G8 nation. But Nigel was exceedingly well compensated, and he had no intention of being caught. He paused to breathe the secret prayer of all those who consign their life to the wind, and then activated the fastened seatbelt sign. Inside the plane, anything that wasn't strapped down hit the ceiling. This included one of the adjusters. He was knocked unconscious immediately. In horror, all watched as the body rose in a horrible rag-doll pantomime as Nigel's inverted dive accelerated past the pull of gravity. It's a shame Topper couldn't be here, Edwin thought. He would be enjoying this. With a flick of the controls, Nigel righted the plane. The wings remained on, and he allowed himself the luxury of a smile. As the plane roared on below radar, several adjusters restored order to the passenger compartment. One of them handed a phone to Edwin.
Edwin, what happened? What are we gonna do? What's the plan?
Topper, calm down. It's very simple. I need you to pick me up at the airport.
That's it? That's all you're gonna do? You're all over the television.
No, but it's the first thing. And we'll keep it first. As the plane taxied to a stop, a series of high-powered European sedans raced across the tarmac to meet it.
Okay, Edwin, I brought a lot of guns and all the money I could find.
You did the right thing, Topper.
I knew it! I knew you'd want the guns. Lawyers, guns, and money. The shit has hit the fan!
Topper, please ride in the other car.
What?
If anything happens to me, you're the only one left. You've got to keep the organization going.
Don't say that. I could never.
You can, and you will. Now get me out of this mess.
Okay. Okay.
Goodbye, Topper. Topper stuck his head through the sunroof of the lead car and fired a few shots in the air.
Come on, you bastards! Let's run some red lights!
He waved them on like Napoleon leading a cavalry charge as he directed the convoy to head at high speed for an emergency vehicle access point. As they smashed through the gate, Topper fired indiscriminately at the guard post, traffic signs, and passing clouds. It was the high point of Topper's life, especially because he had just outwitted the smartest person he knew and gotten himself immunity from prosecution in the process. As he delivered the convoy into the FBI's trap, an alley that was quickly blocked at both ends, Topper allowed himself a moment of glory. All this smart guy planning in the world was nothing. Nothing if there wasn't someone there to do your dirty work. The smart guys never win because they don't have any balls. And he was going to explain all of this to Edwin. But when he threw open the car door, Edwin wasn't there. Topper had been so excited with all the shooting and gate smashing, he hadn't noticed that Edwin had gotten into the car and gotten right back out again. Not missing a beat, Topper pulled his Magnum from inside his suit and said to the confused-looking adjusters,
"Edwin set us up!"
He knew they'd believe them. They were operations guys, too. Besides, didn't everybody enjoy a good gunfight? Miles away from danger, Edwin sat in the back of a nondescript panel truck. While Topper had rushed enthusiastically to the wrong destination, Edwin calmly reopened his book and resumed his reading in the 34th canto. For the one the front mouth gripped, the teeth were as nothing to the claws which sliced and tore the skin until his back was stripped. That soul, my master said, who suffers most is Judas Iscariot. Head locked inside, he flails his legs. Of the other two, who twist with their heads down the black mouth, holds the shade of Brutus writhing, but not a word will he scream. Cassius is the sinewy one on the other side. But night is rising again, and it is time that we depart, for we have seen the whole.